Step into the wealth elevator and join our 12,000 plus member community who have passively invested over $200 million to acquire over $2.1 billion in commercial real estate. Sign up by going to thewealthelevator.com/club. And here we go.
Hey, Simple Facet Capital listeners. Today we are going to be doing a coaching call where the topics are going to be withdrawing money from your 401k. Should you do a 529 plan for college savings? If not, what should you do? And a little bit review on infinite banking. I know a lot of you guys have been asking about that. If you're like, what the heck is infinite banking? And if you guys want to hang out with more of the folks, just myself and the person you're going to hear on this next coaching call, join us in Hawaii in January. Go to simplepassivecashflow.com/2022retreat and we'll see you there.
This is a story about a dude named Lane. He moved to the mainland and bought one place to stay. And then one day he went and tried to rent them out. And then he became one real investor man.
Hey folks, okay. He just went through the syndication e-course. Why don't you give people a little context before we get going through some of your questions?
Sure. I'm just looking to understand the syndication laddering. I jumped in. There's a little bit of a lag before I start cash flowing. And I'm dealing with a spouse support. So she's in this wait and see game. I am also looking at my 401k. I'm 41 years old. I'm pretty heavy in my 401k accounts. So what I've been looking at is what's the option as far as borrowing and paying myself interest. And I wanted to see if that's what relates to this infinite banking concept that you've mentioned before in some of your content. And one of my other questions, which I put these together about a week ago, you posted something about 529 plans and infinite banking. I have two toddlers and I'm trying to go after, I'm thinking capture this time. This time, my kids are 4 years old, trying to do like a 50% discount on college. So I am heavy in my 529s.
How about we come back to the college 529 savings after? Just a quick teaser is the 529 plans are like 401ks. 401ks are like investing for the clueless. 529s are essentially the same. Everything we're going to talk about 401ks carries over to 529 plans. I don't know why anybody does them, quite honestly. Just because something's labeled a retirement plan or education plan doesn't mean that's what necessary you should use it. If you just want to do what everybody else does and gets killed and has a bunch of garbage options, go with a 529 plan or 401k. First things first, like taking money out of the 401k retirement plan, let's kind of talk about that first because it's a very common thing. Most people don't have too much in their checking savings account. Why would you? That's just not a good use of your money. But then they start investing and then now they have to go. They start to realize that this alternative investing is real. And now they start to go look for low-hanging fruit. So the order of operations is money in, you know, checking and savings, your liquidity, your home equity, and you can get a HELOC or a cash out refinance. And then in conjunction, somewhere in there, might be tied in order of operations with your retirement funds, possibly getting a loan or just similar to like HELOC in that you can put it back should all this not work. But most people start to get to this stage and they're like, yeah, screw that 401k stuff. Because the issue that I have it is it's retail investments. It's all the stuff they want you to invest in. So they hit you with these high fees, carried interest, Vanguard. I used to be in that stuff a long time ago. And I thought, whoa, these are low expense ratios, right? That's nonsense. Like you don't see all the hidden fees behind there, the marketing, the salaries, the expense accounts. And that's the problem with the 401ks. You're trapped within that stuff.
I do have a HELOC and it's untapped. Between the HELOC and the 401k loan, I figure the 401k loan, I think now the maximum borrow is 50% or 100 grand, whatever is lower, I believe.
Well, most people take it all the way up to 80 to 100%, actually. But no. You must have, what's your house worth now and what do you owe on it?
My house is worth about 1.8, live in the Bay Area, and I just refied, pulled cash out. I owe about 1 million.
Okay, so you have a pretty good equity position, which is actually not good in our world because we got to get that moving. There's a lot of people in the family office group that are running around trying to find the best HELOC banks. Usually it's just a community, but usually you can be in like the 3-4% range easily at 80% loan to value. So you have some shopping there to do to go find that community bank.
Yeah, I went with my local credit union and I got a 3.2.
You could probably do better. It should be a lot lower rate for 50% on the value. You should be able to take it up to 80. But for now, you're good. You're not going to blow through 500 grand, $1 million. Mm-hmm. But put this on the docket to be your next 3 to 6 month project is go to find that next HELOC that's going to get you 80%. And that'll keep you rolling for another 6 months to a year, maybe two, depending how much you want to deploy.
Got it. And I just figured, though, that the 401k borrow would be better for me because I'm paying myself interest.
That's what people say. In theory, paying yourself such a small percentage, that doesn't really matter. You're prepared to pay it to yourself, or you pay it, just throw it down the drain, in my opinion. Again, follow the numbers. All of this stuff is just what people say. If your coworker is saying this type of stuff, you need to stop it and question it. You're paying back yourself the interest, but that what you got to really think about is the sunk cost or the opportunity loss of keeping it in there. All this money is not making anything, right? Especially the home equity. I don't know. You can make an argument either way, right? What's going to go up, the stocks or the house? Both of them is a kind of a crapshoot to me. But most people, they go and raid the home equity first because most people are really skittish about taking money out of their retirement. Right?
Yeah.
They say it like that because people get really freaked out when you start to do that type of stuff. But if it were me, I would feel a lot more skittish with money in my retirement plan right now because that all that stuff is just pumped with money. Equity in your home, I feel like, is a little more secure. Not just because in 2008, real estate went to hell. That was a real estate crisis. That's what triggered the recession in 2008. But typically, it's like most times it's a crash in the stock market, but home equity values.
I agree. I think that a hedge on the 401k with the market would be the way to go as far as pulling money out of that.
Here at SimplePassiveCashflow.com, we work with hardworking professionals looking to opt out of investments for the clueless. I mean, mainstream investing. With so many randos out there, hollow endorsements on crowdfunding websites that just act as broker-dealers taking commission to list syndications on their website, and institutional Wall Street companies out there, who do you trust? We follow a simple formula of working with people we have a direct relationship with while enjoying high returns and a quicker path to financial freedom. The trifecta is simple. First, syndication deals to get 2, passive losses to unlock other tax best practices, and thirdly, infinite banking. The problem that many astute Simple Passive Cashflow Club members find is that syndications typically have a minimum of $50,000 to invest, and frequency of deals is sporadic. Check out my article at simplepassivecashflow.com/ofund to learn how I always have cash on hand using the American Homeowner Preservation Fund as part of this 1-2 punch to be ready for a great deal while still making an attractive return. I've been investing in AHP since 2016. AHP is a crowdfunding solution to the mortgage crisis in America, where the fund takes care of operational headaches for you and pulls money together to get bulk discounts on distressed mortgages. It's a business model that I think gets stronger should a slowdown in the economy come, because there will be even more distressed inventory for AHP to purchase. AHP's latest fund, Pre-REO, aims to keep people in their homes by investing in notes so you can make a 7% return and feel good about making a positive social impact. Invest as little as $100 by going to prereo.com/investors. And if you want the free Burn Zone book, please claim it at simplepassivecashflow.com/AHP. And oh, don't forget to join our private investor club. Join us at simplepassivecashflow.com/club.
Before we move off the house, are you guys going to stay? You got a younger family. Are you guys going to stay in the house for the next 5, 10 years? Or?
At least 15.
Yeah. All I got to say is most people in my community, they say, screw the house. Let me go get a little bit smaller like rental or apartment that has a really sweet luxury pool. And let me spend my time instead of screwing around in the yard, you know, where somebody else cleans my pool for me. But just saying. Yeah. Right, because you can unlock a lot of equity that way. Shoot, with $1 million of equity right now, you could put into something AHP. And I would have put all my money in there, that's for sure. But that could give you $100,000 passive income a year. That pays for 1, 2, 3, 4 kids' college today. Yeah. Probably 4 college kids in the future. And there you go. That's your 529 plan. Done. But we all choose to just keep it locked up in our home equity, not doing jack.
Doing the home equity loan, pulling money out that way and not moving.
For the time being, that's a great plan. I think you're fine with that for the next couple of years. But if I ask that question and some people have that hint of, I want to move in to a bigger house or smaller house, then I say move out now and just dump the equity out now. But if you're going to stay there long, what I would say is just refinance the whole damn thing right now and suck out all the equity, do a cash out refinance, suck it all out as much as you can. But of course, I think you're still in the beginning stages, right? So that's where you want to use the HELOC a little bit longer. Just you know, make yourself a little comfortable then. But at some point, you drain equity because the HELOC can only get you so far. It can only get you to 70-80% of the value in most cases.
Yeah, I will shop that. I'll look into that. And I'll even ask my credit union in the next month or so. Rates are really good right now, too. What do you think about the syndication and the laddering with the development at County Line? And
developments, I would personally go to more of a stabilized cash flowing asset, especially if you're new to this type of world. You think of in deals in terms of risk-adjusted returns, right? Stabilized assets is like buying an existing lemonade stand with existing profit and loss statements. You can see what it runs at, where a development is just a shot in the dark in a way. Technically, if you could build it, there's more margin room for error, but you have to wait a lot longer to see the egg hatch. The way I did it and the way I preach general wealth building to people is start off with singles and base hits. And in this indication, that is more stabilized assets that give cash flow pretty quickly and have lighter value add. Or in the rental property world, for people under $500,000 net worth, just go buy rental properties one by one, like how I did.
Yeah, I think in my situation, though, I need to be a little bit more passive. I'm not going to go out and buy individual properties. That's what makes your multifamily deals attractive to me, because I can be passive.
I just have to say it because some ding-dong who is a young kid is going to listen to this podcast and then think they're going to go into an apartment deal and they have no money. And so I have to say that. But yeah, if you're an accredited investor, in my opinion, people joke about this all the time in my groups. Can you really tell me any good reason to own a rental property? Debt in your name, the headache, the fact that you're getting abused as a remote rental. Let's not get started with all this BRRRR stuff, right? I think the general strategy is going into intermittent deals, spacing it out, and just dollar cost averaging. Same technique they taught you with stock market investing.
My biggest challenge now is just negotiating it with my spouse, because the conventional way to invest is just through these 401ks and these other vessels to invest. I've got to convince her that this is going to pay off and be able to produce some passive income. But so my current deal is 2 years lagged.
You screwed yourself. You shouldn't have done that, man.
I know. I screwed myself. But I think that County Line project is going to be fun to watch, you know, be a part of. This is why I'm going back to the 401k, because I think it's a good strategy with Horton negotiating with her. And it's, if I want to retire early, let's use some of my retirement and not really hit the family.
Which is just an emotional thing, right? Whether it's retirement or money in your wallet, it's all the money at the end of the day. I think where people get gummed up, they emotionally feel like 401k, Roth IRA, that's your retirement. And I even have like sophisticated investors earmarking things in their own mind that way too. So I get it. They think one is more long-term, one is more short-term. But to me, it's all the same. You figure out what your asset allocation or time horizons are, and money is money.
Yeah, that's where my current head is at. And as far as the syndication deals, you have the one presentation coming up today. I think it's Aurora. Do you see the fluctuation or the opportunities to tailing off or increasing? What do you see as far as the market conditions?
Right now, the getting's good, right? Because in the residential market has gotten really overheated, in my opinion, because of low supply. I think demand has even gotten lower, but because supply has dropped so much, that's what dictates the prices, which is very emotional driven. That's why I don't like residential properties. But in the commercial world, we haven't had that big run-up yet, but you've seen rents rise the first half of 2021. It's all completely obvious what's happening, and cap rates are dropping. You're having cap rate compression, but it's not to a place where your average internet investor is like jumping into commercial properties quite yet, right? Maybe this time next year, for sure. There'll always be deals, because what makes for investment? The banks lend money at X, and the cap rates are Y, and there's always a difference between X minus Y. There will always be a differential. There will always be a difference. And then you apply leverage, and that's how you make yield. The cap rates will always be making yielding more than interest rates in a world where gravity works. I'm sure it could go backwards for a little bit. I don't think it ever has, but that's what makes the world run. Right. I think what you're getting to is, hey, what if I wait? If you wait, the best time to do anything was yesterday. They always change, like, for example, infinite banking, they always change the rules. Best time was yesterday. Best time to buy that rental was yesterday. It's just constantly going to be that. You guys are just like making it tough when you guys doing this. Just be prudent, stoic, and just constantly dollar cost average into stuff that makes sense. And it's difficult now because you're getting started. But to me, that's the outlook that you have. You don't need to be like me and have 100% of my stuff in alternative investments. That's for sure. I totally respect if you want 20 to 50% into paper assets. That's fine. But over time, the kind of the percentage definitely goes to the alternative asset size. You look at, I've seen this group, Tiger 21, it's all $10 million families and above own paper assets. They don't own like mutual funds and stuff like that.
I do think that we'll always try to be conventional in some manner from our perspective. But I have a job to do and just convince my spouse that this is, you know, legit and try to jump into one of these like more conventional deals you do.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Your spouse, do they work too? Or what do they, you guys single income?
She works. She makes more than me and she's in tech.
Good for you, man.
She's really involved in our finances and wants to have a say.
Did I send you the videos from our bubble event where we had like a spouses panel? I can send him an email later. And I guess everybody listening, if you guys want the spousal tips and webinars, shoot me an email with the subject line spouse and then we can send it off to you guys too. The takeaway is everybody does it differently. It's just like sick parent. You never tell another person what to do because they always just turn around, do it their own way, and you shouldn't talk about it. But we talk about it in our group and we acknowledge the fact that everybody has different marriage structures, different ways of dealing. Some, your spouse is involved, which I think is good. Some don't care, but tell you absolutely you can't do anything. That's the most frustrating thing. So I guess be grateful that's not the case. Sometimes you have to make deals, right? Like marriage is a negotiation. Did your spouse, out of your family and their family, which had more money growing up?
It was about the same, but our backgrounds are completely different. I'm coming from a farm. She comes from the Bay Area. We have a similar background.
Whenever you're working with differences in people, it's always cool to understand the backgrounds of the people, then you understand more. Some things I notice a lot of times is when like the spouse, if they didn't come from money, then they're really going to like in the scarce mindset kind of way. Again, not a bad thing. That's just how they are. They want to cling on to the house. So that home equity thing is a big thing, which doesn't seem like the case here. I think that's the cool thing with people who had money, lower middle class, we're not talking like low end, but they know that they'll be okay. So they're okay with you doing things like taking money out of your HELOC and refinancing or renting. Like you're not owning. You don't need to own, right? But in this case, it might have an issue with the retirement fund. I don't know if you've ever had that discussion. Okay, if I were to do one of them, take a couple hundred thousand, which is a very small minority of the whole net worth, out of retirements or our home equity, which one would you prefer? That's a good starting point and why.
Yeah. And I do think it's going to towards the 401k because it affects me and my potential retiring early. And it may be more like palatable to her to accept that.
Something I've picked up from Chris Voss seminar, he's a never split the difference. Funny, he puts you in a high stakes, like hostage negotiation. One of the tactics in the book, if you pay attention, is like when you negotiate, and you're in a negotiation in this case, that you label the other side. So then you know, you ask the question, does that mean that you rather have the security in your house is what I'm hearing. You label them so you get the conversation going. Right? No, I'm not. I just think that, and then you know, the retirement stuff is more your long-term thing and you retire and that type of stuff. And that's what our family wants. And then you draw out the information as opposed to each side stonewalling. But it sounds like sounds like a totally functioning relationship to me. Just got to figure out, you're not going to go balls to the wall in the first year or two for sure. But which of the two is the lesser? And in this case, it's the maybe leaving the home equity alone a little bit and going after retirement.
I think that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Good segue. We've talked about the home equity. So it's your plan of attack is probably the retirement fund. Like you said, you can take a loan on it. I don't buy the whole thing about paying yourself interest. It's just like a HELOC. That the interest paid is a wash anyway. Next investment, you're just going to take a loan for the retirement or something like that? Is that the plan?
Yeah. Well, I guess my options would be withdraw penalty with a penalty or take the loan. And then I have my current employer's account and then I have my own self-directed IRA. So those are really like the options I'm playing with.
Yeah. Okay. You have some IRA 401k money that has with a still previous employer that you haven't rolled over yet. I think one rule is you never really want to roll it over. You just want to keep it how it is. Because once you roll it over to the existing employer, now it's probably stuck there.
Actually, what I did was I rolled it over into my own self-directed IRA. So none of my previous employers have my 401ks.
What's your plan? Let's talk about it, what the tax implications are.
Currently, my plan would be to take the loan out of my current employer. There's very little risk that I'll work there at least 5 to 10 years. I had to have to pay the loan back either at time of when I'm terminated or terminate the employment or over the life of the loan. I think it's like a 10-year term.
Again, we're talking about loans, right? We're not talking about withdrawals. Okay. So for the folks listening, your loans, you're not taking it out, right? It's the withdrawals that now triggers the taxable event, shows up as income. What we're doing here is we're dancing around it, and which is fine for now. If you were more gung-ho about this stuff, I would say just take it out. And in this case, if we were, let's just play that scenario out. Where approximately is your adjusted gross income?
Mine's about 250 individually.
What about combined married? Okay, sorry, you guys are screwed. You guys are in a tough spot because ideally what you want to do is married file jointly. Right now, we try and keep people under 330 because that's when you really start to get hammered with taxes. And again, if you guys are listening to this in the future, these things, the tax brackets dance around a little bit, but the same idea. Probably should prevail. You want to leak money out of your 401k slowly as withdrawals so you don't go into that next higher tax bracket. It is, whatever, if that's your plan. But ideally, you'd like to stay under there. If you guys made $200,000 a year, married file jointly, you could take 130 out, in theory, and not be too bad. That'd probably be a good bet because you're probably paying less tax bracket today than in the future.
So I need to encourage her to take a pay cut or change jobs and take a pay cut.
Yeah, both of you guys make high salaries. And for those of you guys in that situation, it might make sense to just suck it up and just work, burn the candle on both ends a little bit longer, as opposed to some of our plans that have like disproportionate incomes, like doctors and stay-at-home spouses. That's the ideal strategy right now. They can do real estate professional status strategy and use the passive losses to offset income. Of course, there's a lot of hoops to jump through with that rep status strategy, and we're not going to get into that now. They have a little bit more options where you guys are. Good news, you can make a lot of money. As far as taxes options, there isn't too many, right? And I think now you start to look at less desirable options or exotic options, such as like land conservation easements, or be on the lookout on these next solar credits coming out with the next infrastructure bill. Who knows what happens with that, but that's where I would be looking out to next. Or if one of you guys are burnt out part-time, right? Like I said, you guys have enough dry powder liquidity. You should just be able to make $100,000 a year. The fact that you guys are not is on you guys. That's just a choice that you guys are making. But you should have that much income coming in that I think that will sustain life for you guys. Most people in our group are pretty frugal. I don't know why you guys are going to work tomorrow, but you are. Yeah. But that just takes some time to understand how this all works, because right now this is what frustrates me. Everybody's stuck in these 401k, 529 garbage investments, and that's why y'all are still working right now.
Make more and then you try to defer your salary to, you know,
pay it at our tax bracket in the future. That's exactly what the government wants. I don't think they meant to do that because I don't think the government is that smart. But in a way, they have a pretty much blank check on all your money right now, retirement on the 529, and not 529, because technically if you use it for education expenses, they can't touch it. But your 401k, you're going to have to pay taxes on that eventually in your IRA.
And who knows what that is at the moment? We won't know until I retire.
Yeah, but I'm betting that's going to be higher than what you are now. But the game is we're going to try and take it out or withdraw it at some opportune time from now to the next few decades, when the opportunity to jailbreak it out, lower tax needs is there. Right? Get it, again, it's good. Right now, for you guys, you don't have very many right now. But what we do know is like if the money is in there now, it's not making jack. It's just in retail investments. But the idea is to take it out slowly to get it into good stuff. Which you're still trying to land on your feet a little bit, so I get that, but just do it in a tax smart way. Some people are like, they come in and they're like, screw this. This is mess. I'm going to take all my money out of that stuff, right?
Really?
Whoa. I don't know if you can invest that quickly, and you just want to be a little smart about this. That's just going to balloon your adjusted gross income. You're going to pay a boatload of taxes on that. Just fly under the radar. Stay under a certain threshold. Leak it out slowly is the idea. But for now, you're just going to do loan, and that's fine. You don't really trigger taxes at that point. Another hang up people get emotionally is there like, I have to pay, make these loan payments, right, to myself. That's just an emotional thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if it really bothers you, just set aside a certain amount and take extra to pay it.
Yeah, that doesn't really bother me. It's just, it's moving money around in different buckets, right?
Yeah. And I think that's the hard thing is like people, first of all, they get emotionally tied that this is a retirement plan. You're taking money out of your retirement. And make no mistake, we're not doing that. This stuff, we're not going and buying like fun vacations with that money, right, for long-term savings and retirement. But it's not going to be an account with the government for your future.
So in regards to the loan, do you know, and there's certain requirements that I need to abide by to take the loan, right? Or can I just take the loan freely?
Yeah, so that's what I was like. I'm not sure on that, but usually they want you to have some kind of hardship thing or you're buying a house, which you're not. So I would think the only thing you guys have is the hardship rule. And I think at this point, it's going to be hard for you guys. Good luck if you can get the loan. All roads just going to take the thing out.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get it. If not, I guess we'll do withdrawals.
I'm pretty sure you can't take a loan where your guy's at. There's no opportunity for that type of stuff. I've seen people like lie and say we're using it for home equity because something broke in the kitchen, bathroom model, and then turn around and use the money for something else. I don't know how legal that is, but whatever, I guess. But you're probably not going to lie. And so you're probably going to come back, all right, the loan is eliminated as a set of options. So you got to either choose it, withdraw money from your retirement and or take a loan from your HELOC. So when you come back to your boss, which is your wife, what do you think? What do you think?
Yeah, I'll be optimistic. She was gung-ho for the county line, and I think she'll go for it.
For the loan from the HELOC.
Yeah.
And yeah. I would recommend doing that.
Yeah. So I think what I'll do is I'll just lay it out that I'll try to sacrifice my 401k temporarily, and then that probably won't work out, and then I'll land into the HELOC.
Yeah, boozling her in a way.
I just can't share this with her.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll probably release this months later. So you got a lot of time.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll just look to hopefully I can draw on that HELOC that I already set up now anytime. And when I see a good deal come by, I'm probably going to jump in.
Yeah. And what you have right now, I'm sure will get you going for the next 6 months to you. But you got a lot of equity there. So I would shop around. There's a lot of disparity between rates and loan to value. But what you're looking for is like 80% loan to value, the same rate or better for the most part. And I think this is another emotional thing. People are like, my goodness, this guy's got 3.2%. I want to get that. I don't want to get 4%. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Playing a different ballgame than most people because you're using the money for something else to go make more money. But yeah, I think that will probably get you going for a couple of years.
And I think once we get into the first deal and we get that first check, I think it's going to help me with my negotiations with the boss.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I hope so. I really hope so. Yeah. So we're good on that subject. I think the next thing on your list was...
Yeah, college savings. So you're a new father. I've taken the conventional road with the 529 plans and you recently posted about that, right? So...
Yeah, 529 plans, they're just like 401ks, right? The jacked up thing about them is they keep you within a set of options that they want you to take because they're high fees and they're crap. And that's my only beef with it. If you can self-direct, you can self-direct your retirement funds, that's fine. I still don't recommend doing that. And I think you can self-direct your 529 yourself, but it's very limited, right? If anything, the Coverdell is better because Coverdell is like a self-directed 529. There's more options that you can invest in. But if you're investing in real estate, pros tax-free anyway, right? That's why you do real estate. So it negates all the reason for using the stuff, in my opinion. I just think if you invest in cash, you can pay so much less taxes if you're smart because you get the passive activity losses. It negates any of these types of traditional, conventional things. Traditional and conventional, if you haven't been tipped off yet, you guys, that's when you get slaughtered with the cows. It's not a good plan to go conventional, in my opinion. But what I would do for education is I would do like an infinite banking policy and just have that as earmarked money, especially if your kids are a little bit older, just put it in there for safekeeping. But now your kids are younger. My kids, like the youngest they can get for the most part. Now's the time where you want to be more aggressive, right?
Yeah. So unfortunately, I did get aggressive with the 529. So at this point, I don't know how I could get out of the 529 without taking a penalty.
What do you got in there?
I've got two kids, about 80 grand each.
It is what it is. You can just leave it in there. Just let it do what it's going to do. And this kind of goes to, not everybody needs to be 100% like alternative investments. And if you want some stocks, there's your stocks right there.
Yeah.
I think that the risk-adjusted return isn't that great, but you're trying to satisfy some diversification in terms of different asset classes. There you go. But I would say maybe stop doing it. You could take it out too, but you already have money to invest. So just leave it where it's at for now. Yeah. I wouldn't put more to it. Does that sound like?
Yeah. No, that's pretty much where I'm at now. And I do just designate it as like diversification against alternative.
I got some flack for that post because like people are like, you're such an a-hole. Dare you get rid of your kids' education fund? I'm like, dude, chill out, man. I have my other retirement and I've got all these like money elsewhere. Just because I don't call it a 529 plan, you know, it's not a 529 plan, doesn't mean I don't have a kid's college. Like, I'm not heartless, I don't know, anything with kids.
Yeah.
So you never want to give parenting advice. People are like, it's so like.
It's very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. So for the record, folks, I do have a college savings plan. I just don't put it in that 529 plan. And I'm sorry if I offend you guys for saying that stuff is nonsense, but it is. You're putting in exactly the stuff that they want you to put in with all these big brokerages and their cafeteria garbage option. I'm okay with the 529 idea in general, but I'm not okay with the options they give you to invest.
It's very limited.
Yeah. But even with that said, I don't like the 529 because what if your kid doesn't go to college too?
Yeah.
I would just make a boatload of money. I don't have to worry about it. Yeah. And this is something I got really frustrated the other day. A lot of people, especially here in Hawaii, have like $1 million of equity in their houses that are grandparents. And their goal in life is to pay off their mortgage. $1 million, put it into something. I always use AHP. They sponsor the show too. But they're just an example of a very lazy type of investment fund where you can get 8%, I think now. Then used to be 10%. Used to be 12%, actually, a long time ago. If you have $1 million of equity at 10%, that's 100 grand a year. Shoot, that pays for college for 3 kids today, a private. I forget how much it will cost. But I'm like, why don't you, like, grandma, grandpa, why don't you get a home equity loan and put it, get your money working? But their thought process is they just don't know about this stuff too. But to me, it's a little selfish because it's like they're putting their security higher than they could be paying for their kids' college today. Or that could be growing to so much more 18 years from now. It's probably bad that I call it selfish. It's just they're ignorant to the fact that you can do this type of stuff. And we're all brainwashed to do exactly what they're doing. Right. I just got frustrated the other day. This is very prevalent.
Very true. We're just taking advantage of that gift, the gifting.
Yeah, it comes down to being good stewards with wealth, right? Some people have wealth and they don't do anything with it. They just squander it for the rest of their life. Other people, they understand the risks and prudent debt and they get able to have it grow or stay where it's at. 90% of people or 90% of wealth leaves family in 2 or 3 generations for a reason.
Right. It's a good point.
But yeah, the 520, if I were you, I know you got other investable funds. I'll just leave it where it's at. It is what it is. 160 grand in 10, 20 years isn't going to be enough.
They say Stanford in 18 years will be $450,000.
Yeah. Apparently the side door is closed now. I watched that Netflix special. A bad joke though. The one where all the rich parents were paying for their kids to get into the colleges. Yeah. You got to go in the back door and that's really expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I don't know. It is what it is with the college stuff for you.
Yeah, I'll look into if I ever need to withdraw a 10% penalty. It's some money, but it's not a whole lot. And
it's very similar to some people like have really bad life insurance policies, right? The whole life policies that were just configured the wrong way, but they're long lost college, high school friend that they never talked that takes them out to lunch and puts them into this really bad policy. In most cases, you can just 1035 into a new infinite banking, more friendly policy. But in some cases, it's just better just to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Use another bad joke to just get rid of the life insurance. So the same thought process with the 520, right? Just go keep going with it. It is what it is, as opposed to just withdrawing and starting over again. Yeah, but the infinite banking comes in because, especially if you have a skeptic spouse, at least that gets your money working, 4 or 5% tax-free. You can sell them on the idea that it's off the table of litigators, who doesn't like that? And it's not like you're putting the money out to an investment where there is perceived risk on investing with some dishonest person too. Infinite banking stays, it's way more, I probably shouldn't say this, but it's way more secure than any bank or any like mutual fund. It's a life insurance. It's backed by some of the most like AAA credit rated companies that's been around since the Civil War. If you want anything more secure, I mean, go to a life insurance company, the good ones, right? The top rated ones, not one of these schmoke. So that can be a way, like for somebody in your shoes who has a lot of dry powder that you're going to responsibly deploy over the next several years, at least you're probably antsy to get it done, but your spouse probably wants to pump the brakes. But as a compromise, maybe just do 50 grand, 100 grand a year into one of these infinite banking policies and invest out of it. But at least your money is working in that and it's building up that cash value over time.
To me,
everybody over $1 million net worth should have one of these things. It's a no-brainer. Yeah. And again, we're talking to you, non-accredited investor who has no money. Don't do infinite banking. Don't get caught up in all the podcasts, marketing hype. It's not for you yet. There are some fees associated, of course, but in the long run, it makes more sense than that. Yeah. Because you're new to this stuff and you hear all these ideas, you want to get moving, but you can't got the ball and chain in a way. But the infinite banking is a very logical idea, I think, that is very prudent and safe.
Do you have any content on that as far as the background of
simplepassivecashflow.com/banking is the place where I throw all the webinars and stuff like that. But if people want more in depth, we've recorded some FAQs, and then if people need like referrals to folks, they can shoot me an email. Just put IBC in the subject line and I can send that to you. It's a rabbit hole though. First, like when people come into the mastermind group, always try and get them to get educated on syndication deals, right? Because the syndication deals is, first of all, you don't want to invest in a bad deal or that somebody's going to steal your money. So that's the first thing we try and mitigate. So that's always like a third of the curriculum, right? Your first few months are focused on that. And then taxes, especially for somebody in your kind of income level. Taxes is a big thing. But infinite banking is at the end of the first year. Most times, people who like to lone wolf it and do all this stuff themselves, which I think is dumb because good luck. I've took me so long and mistakes and wasted money to learn on my own. But that's why we have a family office group, hold your hand and kind of teach you exactly what to do. And then we set you up with people within the group who've done it already. So you can go build a relationship in the process with that person that you can carry on forever and talk whatever investing or deals that you want to talk about. And more importantly, the soft subjects, right? How do you pass this off to your kids without them becoming nincompoops? But then you talk with them, the pros and cons, how they did their infinite banking policy, why they did $75,000 instead of $25,000. Why did they do $250,000 a year, for example? And then you come up with your own idea, you formulate it, and then we send you off to all the tax legal guys after you've already had your plan. Because in most cases, if you go off to a professional, they're just going to sell you what they're trying to sell you. There's so many things in this financial world that's just a bunch of products. You really need somebody who's going to architect it, and that's going to be you. You got to be educated and empowered to talk intelligently and to know what you don't want. But yeah, the infinite banking is at the tail end of it. It's a huge rabbit hole for sure. Huge rabbit in terms of learning it. You know, most people who've done it say there's a lot of stuff on it, but just get it, man, and don't complicate it. Just get like a policy. Like my golden rule is start off with a third of your annual net. So if you guys, I don't know how much you guys net at the end of the year, but maybe you guys net $120,000 to savings. You could put that to maybe 4 houses a year if you wanted to. If you didn't value your time and energy, you could buy 4 chunky rentals with that. Right. But my general rule on infinite banking is start off with at least a third of your net every year. And then that way you learn how infinite banking works. You take loans from it, you invest it, then when you have more money, you put it back in there, and you learn how it works. And so it's always good to start off with a little bit of a test investment first, and then go bigger. My first one that I did for myself was $50,000 a year. And then I did bigger after that, after I got the hang of it. But yeah, if you guys net $120,000 after income minus expenses at the end of the year, do 40 grand every year. But because you have like liquidity in a way, I think based on the little bit I've refreshed myself in this last 30 minutes, hour talking, I think you guys should probably do $50,000 to $100,000 a year, right? Because you have all that home equity not doing jack.
Right.
What you want to do is take that and put it into here for now. Because you can take it right back at the next day as a loan. That's the whole point. That's what you're trying to do in banking. So in fact, I would probably do 100 grand, just shooting from the hip, or at least 40 grand a year for 5 to 6 years. I always like to do the shorter period, personally. The insurance salesman's always like going to try and get you the longer one so they can get more commissions. Yeah. They don't have to deal with you less every 10 years instead of every 6 years. But that's just my take on it. But we got a lot of content on it. Just shoot me an email, the subject line, and then I can give you the videos and then I'll connect you once you've studied up.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. At least you can do something, right? Because it's fun. Stuff is fun.
Yeah.
It's different and it's totally different. Like, who do you talk to about this stuff? It's kooky.
Yeah. I've haven't heard of it until now. So
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's interesting stuff.
Yeah. And what frustrating is like everything in mainstream financial advice. If you look up Dave Ramsey, he absolutely tears this whole life thing apart. You know, he says it's a total scam. I'm like, dude, we're not even configuring it the way you're talking about. And we're using it for something totally. He says, well, if it don't get whole life, get term life. That's what life insurance is for. But dude, we're doing it for a totally different way. The wealthy use things very differently. We're doing this as a way to put money in and suck it right back out as a loan from ourselves and taking money off the table of litigators. That's all we're doing. And the fact that it's life insurance, that's because if we can keep it under this, what's called MEC level, we don't have to pay taxes. So it's a tax loophole is what it is. It's a tax loophole that the Congress people in progress made that we're just following. We're no dummy.
So it makes you wonder who Ramsey's representing to poo-poo
well,
it, right?
He's not representing anything. I think he does a good job. Him and Susie Orman, a lot of these people, they just cater towards the majority of people, the conventional traditional people.
Right.
The conventional traditional people are horrible with their finances. They just can't seem to save more money than they make. Or they just don't make more than $50,000 a year. And I'm sorry if that's you. I went to college and I was lucky enough to go and I'm in the situation where I am. And I think some people in this world are in the same situation, but they play by a different set of paradigms than the people who are still at financial 101 level in a way. So I think Dave Ramsey, I think their heart is in the right place, but it's totally guided towards other people. Argument about buying a house, not buying a house. Like I personally believe that you shouldn't buy a house unless your net worth is 2 times, 3 times greater than what the house is worth. So if your house is $2 million, you shouldn't buy a house until your net worth is $6 million.
That's a very unconventional thought.
Yeah. The house is a drag. You need to be investing, growing your money instead of sinking it in a house, not too much, just going with the pace of inflation. But for the Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman people in the world, a house is a forced savings account. Something that they put $1,000, $2,000 a month to. If not, they'd spend it like little kids. It's just, there's paradigms in the world. You need to figure out which side of the paradigm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but just do the math. At the end of the day, the math will tell you what to do. You just need to go in with a very different mindset, yes.
I'll bring that paradigm concept up when I'm negotiating with the boss.
Yeah, I do it to myself all the time. Like, I think the biggest thing that I see successful people have is an open mind. And they look at something very without any emotion or prejudices attached. Like something that happened to me lately, like I'm doing this for fun, like this exotic car hacking course. It's really cool. But like the whole idea of leasing a car, for some reason, I thought that was a good idea. Not too long ago.
Yeah.
I leased a car a year or two ago. And I thought it made sense for me, especially because I was using it for business and I was able to write it off. But what they showed me was like, they showed the numbers and they showed how wrong that thinking was. And the whole premise about car hacking is there's a depreciation schedule and it goes down. And then you want to buy it when it's low. And then when it comes up or it doesn't just bleed depreciation as heavily. Right? That's essentially the hacking of it all. But yeah, I was really gung-ho about thinking the leases were good. Now I see the light and I'm sure my ideas would change in the future. So I reserve the right to change my mind. This is not financial advice. Yeah. But yeah, anything else?
Yeah. The family office mastermind. I've looked into that. I'm considering it. I don't think I'm ready yet, but I will probably eventually.
Well, I don't think you're never ready for it. I think you're just, you need to do that now. In fact, now's the time to be doing it. Like, you're starting from square one. This, you know, it's like shooting an arrow. Now's the time to figure out, get something where you're shooting in the right cow.
Yeah. I'll let you know when I am ready, and hopefully it's sooner than later.
Yeah. When you got 5 hours a month to dedicate to something, that's when you know. We have over 75, 80 people in there, but yeah, it's not for everybody. Yeah. You want to just keep doing it on your own. That's cool too.
For me, it's just deploying my capital. First, I got to get through the boss, and then I got to put some numbers together of how that investment would return in our household.
I think we have like at least a 2x, maybe 3x guarantee that you get that the first year back. Yeah. Cool. I appreciate it. Yeah, we'll stick this in the archives with the other coaching calls. And then if you guys want to learn more about that family office group, go to simplepassivecashflow.com/journey. And I'll see you guys next time.
This website offers very general information concerning real estate for investment purposes. Every investor situation is unique. Always seek the services of licensed third-party appraisers and inspectors to verify the value and condition of any property you intend to purchase. Use the services of professional title and escrow companies and licensed tax, investment, and or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, as in every investment there is risk. The content found here is just my opinion, and things change, and I reserve the right to change my mind. Above all else, do your own analysis and think for yourself, because in the end, you are the only person who is going to look out for your best interests.
The proceeding is not tax, legal, or investment advice, nor an offer to sell securities or investment products. Always make informed decisions with professional guidance. Get educated and surround yourself with a community at thewealthelevator.com/club.